I'd ask now that you give your careful and your prayerful attention to our brother Bob Hedrick.
All right, Ken, if you're getting down there, I'm getting down there, too. All right, thank you. I have to admit I'm a little nervous. First time I used a PowerPoint for a sermon. But I don't want this to be a sermon. I was going to do it as a Sunday school, but we don't get a whole lot of people at Sunday school. So I figured I'd get a bigger audience if I did it as a sermon. So, if there's questions, raise your hand, shout them out. I don't care. I'll try to keep moving so I'm not blocking everybody's view over here. Would it help if the lights were off? Okay. I try to make the slides as easily to view as possible. It also kind of a pain because it kind of ties you into a script. And, you know, even during the song service, I had to use my Palm Pilot because of something occurred to me. And my books were up here. So, like I said, I want this to be very informal because you're my guinea pigs. I'm trying to make this as easy to understand as I can. And so if there's something you don't understand, let me know. So I'll try and make it simpler. All righty. DNA versus the Book of Mormon. A couple of ground rules that I want to lay out there is even the concept of science trying to prove or disprove a belief. Okay? Science measures the natural world. It builds things to measure it, does experiments on things it can see and touch and taste and smell and all that kind of stuff. That's science. Okay? God is not the natural world. He's supernatural. And so there's no way that science can measure God. And so I don't want to give that impression that I think that someday science is going to prove the existence of God or creation or whatever. But I think that when things like this are challenges are made out there, so we have to be able at least to respond to that. I don't want the concept that I think that we can prove or disprove God scientifically for that reason. All right. A couple reasons to do this. We have a responsibility. And our purpose tonight is that we can sit down and we can be able to answer criticisms in a thoughtful, reasoned way. And we have a responsibility that we let our speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man. We're going to be challenged from time to time. And I want this to be like an inoculation. Inoculation, you give a little bit of a virus to somebody, and their body builds up immunities to it. Okay? And so, guess what? This is not the only thing we're ever going to get criticized about. It's just the latest thing. So in a few years, they'll think of something else. Expect it. So and whatever happens then we'll have to deal with that when it comes up. But we have a responsibility that we should have an idea of how to answer. And that's my goal, is at the end of this class, this sermon, this discussion, is that somebody challenges you, you will know how to respond. All right. And to have an answer for every man that asks you a reason of the hope that is in you with meekness and fear. That should be our attitude of meekness. Because I firmly believe that the people that make this claim are sincere in their belief. That most of them have a genuine concern for our welfare that they're worried about. And obviously they have a different set of opinions, but I'm not going to question their motivation. I believe that their motivation is sincere in general, in the most part. All right. DNA versus the Book of Mormon. This is, in case you haven't seen, this is a movie that's been out for a few years, and it circulates from time to time. It's like it kind of peaks and valleys. All of a sudden, it's a hot topic, and all the churches are passing around saying, "Hey, we're going to show this at church today," or whatever, and then they'll pass it out to their Mormon friends because, you know, they have to try to save them. It's put out by a ministry out of Utah somewhere that presents this, and they just try and pass it around to try and save the Mormons. And for that reason, it's partially on the Mormon church itself, but also specifically regarding the DNA and the Book of Mormon. So those are the things I would like to address tonight. The overwhelming evidence negates the Book of Mormon claim that the American Indian represents a genealogical descendant of Israel. How are you going to respond to that?
Prove it,
okay.
Where'd you get your source?
Well, what's the first one first, though? What? What do you mean by that? How about that? What do you mean by that? Okay. Let's look at it. I mean that if you look at the genes that are most commonly found in Native American populations and those that are most commonly found in Jewish populations, they don't coincide at all. That's what I mean by that. What's next? Where do we get your information? See, the whole idea, I know I did that years ago, but see, if I bring it up now, I'm trying to make it so that it's just the checklist that goes off in your brain so that, oh yeah, just boom, boom, boom. Okay? So that's what I would hope to accomplish tonight as well. Where do you get your information? Yes? Okay. We're going to get there, okay? But first I want to respond to where do we get our information, okay? We will address that. So, where do we get our information? It took a long time for me to draw this. But that's the best picture I can get to explain. I'm going to try and keep it as simple as I can, okay? Everybody remembers school, you have cells in your body, right? The cells are these big globule things up there, okay, in the left-hand corner. Inside that cell, there's the nucleus. I'll try and do it, George Bush. Nucleus. Nucleus is where the chromosomes are contained. And the chromosomes are that kind of X-looking thing, okay? In our bodies, we have 23 of them, and they're inside the nucleus. The chromosome itself is actually a tightly coiled strand that looks like a ladder that got twisted. Okay, and you can kind of see how the ladder is down here, and it's just twisted on itself, and then that whole thing gets twisted on itself, and I don't remember all the technical words. My brain hurts from reading them all. But then that is coiled, and it shapes into those things called chromosomes. Now, on these chromosomes, specific sections, this is the DNA right here, okay? That is the double helix called of the DNA, okay? And certain sections of that DNA, it's not like it's one of these little things. These are little proteins, and you don't really need to know what they are, but it's not the little one little thing. It's a whole section of that DNA is called a gene, and this particular gene says you got brown eyes, or this particular gene says you got blue eyes, okay? And this particular gene says, you know, regulates, okay, this is how your digestive system works, and this particular gene says your hair is going to start falling out. It's all encoded on this, okay? Remember, This thing is extremely small, very long, and tightly coiled, and all contained in our nucleus. And just so you know, when you start looking that small, you start seeing God in His design. It's because it's just, to me, it's incredible that that could evolve. But that's another story altogether. But anyway, we have these genes that are on the chromosome that are made up of this DNA, okay? Most of your DNA is junk. Did you know that? More than 90% of your DNA, completely meaningless. So far, that's all they know. They know that, okay, this section here, that's important because that does something for you. But this whole long stretch, yeah, it's all lined out, but doesn't really do anything. We can mutate it and nothing happens to it. Nothing happens to the body. They don't know what it does. They call it junk DNA because it's not something that they've identified as this is something that's important. So the vast majority of our DNA is junk. But I want to have that basic understanding. Does everybody understand what DNA is now? Yes or no, or give me a dumb look, or a yes. Okay, because I don't want to go any farther if we don't have everybody up to speed. Okay. This is what your DNA looks like underneath a microscope. Okay. The one on the left is male. The one on the right is female. As you can see, this is the glob up here, and then they have them divided out down here. All these down here are in that up there. And there's 22, and then there's an X, and then there's a Y. And over here, this one's kind of interesting because we've got 22, we've got an X, and an X. Okay? That's the difference between males and females. What's kind of cool about this one is this one has a third 21 chromosome. Okay? That means this lady has Down syndrome. Okay? It's all chromosomal down on that level. But anyway, that's what it looks like. That those pairs we saw the picture of before, this is what it looks like. Now, what we're going to spend most of our time talking about tonight is that little thing right there, the Y chromosome. The Y chromosome is what makes men men. Okay? You notice that when there's a men have an X and a Y chromosome, and they call it the Y chromosome because women keep asking us why. But on that is what makes the physical differences as well as everything else is on that. Out of all this other stuff, all the other 22 chromosomes, it's this little one that makes a difference. Okay? And that's what we're going to spend most of our time with. We each get, remember that ladder that was twisted, the DNA? Half of that ladder comes from mom, and half of that ladder comes from dad. If dad gave you an X chromosome, and mom gave you an X chromosome, you're a girl. If dad gave you a Y chromosome, and mom gave you an X chromosome, you're a boy. All right? It's very simple, but we all have that same thing, and it's passed on. That's the reason we're looking at that Y chromosome, because that is what's get passed on from father to son to son to son. And we can trace that back. DNA replicates. You may not realize it right now, but right now your DNA is replicating. Okay? What it does is it uses enzymes that dissolve that bond of the ladder. They split the ladder. And as soon as it splits, it starts building another ladder right next to it, okay? And all of a sudden, until there's two separate chromosomes, and those two separate, remember those chromosomes were in the nucleus? The nucleus, they gravitate to either side of the nucleus, and they rip that nucleus in half. And then eventually, they rip that cell in half, and the cell divides, and the body grows, okay? It all starts with ripping the DNA in half, okay? And they call it self-replicating, but it really doesn't do it itself. It's the way God designed it, that there is an enzyme that, when its time is right, dissolves that bond so that it can replicate itself. And that works 99.9999% of the time. Yes. You know what? DNA. It doesn't produce the enzyme, but it's coded out to say, I believe it's on the mitochondria part of the cell that says, okay, it's time to kick in. The DNA itself sends the message to begin making this enzyme, and the enzyme comes and it splits the DNA. It is cool. I mean, just the fact that that's the way God made it just is awesome to me. Because it's been working for how many years? Thousands of years. And like I said, it works 99.9999999% of the time. But it's not perfect. Occasionally, it's what we call a mutation. The scientific term is polymorphism, and we may run into that later, but it's the same thing. It's a mutation. Okay? And guess what? We're all mutants. Sometime in the past, we have small mutations in our genes. Okay? Like I said, remember how most of the DNA is junk? Okay? It really, most of the mutations don't really bother us. What those mutations can do, though, is guess what? We got a mutation now. When it splits, now the DNA has changed. And we can say, okay, from this point on, it's different, so that we can say, okay, we know that whether peoples are related by these mutations. The mutations are what is red. And it's just, for whatever reason, something else gets plugged in and there's something that shouldn't. Okay? But they can read that. And they can see because that particular mutation will be carried on to father, to son, to son, to son, on down the line. So, does everybody understand molecular microbiology now? Because that's what you got. I don't want to go any further if you don't understand that. It's the mutations that are able, they can pick them out, they can identify them, and they can say, okay, we know that these particular people are related because they all have the same mutation, and these people over here don't. We know that these group of people here are related. Comprendo? And the thing is, if this particular people have this particular mutation, have another mutation, we can say that these groups of people are more closely related than this group of people over here because their mutation happened later. Because they both have one mutation, but only one of those groups has the other mutation. Does that make sense how that falls out? It just makes a tree. It branches. Every time there's a mutation, there's a tree. Okay? So, scientists, they've taken this DNA from many different populations. It's been collected and decoded by many different researchers. It's been identified, cataloged, and divided into closely related groups. And scientists are kind of odd people. We know a few. And they like to write in their journals. And they make these their findings known with great big long names, like the phylogeography of Y chromosome binary haplotypes and the origins of modern human populations. Okay? And the effective mutation rate of Y chromosome short tandem repeats and with application to human population divergence time. That's what scientists do. They take all this data, they interpret it, and then they publish their findings to everybody else, all their science friends. Okay? And all their science friends say, hey, that's pretty cool. I think you're right. No, I think you're wrong. Okay? But they publish their findings. That's a big thing. Hey, I got published in this different science journal. Okay? It's a very prestigious event for them. But that's what they do. Now remember, collecting data, what does science measure? Natural things. Things you can touch, you can see, you can measure, all those things. That's all data. Data is simply information. It's just fact. And that's the collection part of the DNA. But, okay, now I have all these facts, but I can't make any sense out of them. So, I take all these facts and I plug in these. I have to interpret what these facts mean. Okay, it's no different than when Jose is interpreting one language to another. It's not always word for word. He interprets, you know, this is a phrase. Well, I have to use this phrase in Spanish that means the same thing, but it's not quite exactly the same. Okay. And scientists do that as well. It's called they interpret the data as well as they collect it. And that's a big difference, and we'll talk about it later. So, everybody can see that pretty clear. Here at the University of Arizona, they have the Y chromosome consortium, where they took all the known Y chromosome strains and put them all in one tree, okay? So that everybody could make sense out of it, right? Can everybody see it clearly? Okay, well, that's what I figured. That's why I'm going to give you handouts. If you want these, great. If you don't, I'll take them back because I burned up a color cartridge. Printing them? Yes? Yeah. Thanks. You have a question? Oh, yeah. I must pass this one out, too, because you're going to need this one, too. I promise you'll understand it by the time we're done. I promise. Okay. Do you want another one? Can you pass that one out? Thank you. All right. What Tony's passing out is this the tree from this Y chromosome consortium. And I'll give you a minute before we go too far. Now you guys are saying, man, I wish they'd left the lights on. Thanks. Does everybody have the tree, the Y one? Okay. If you look at this, what it starts with, you start at the upper left-hand corner. In the upper left-hand corner, that is the nearest, there we go, nearest most common male relative. Okay? That all the other branches come from this one person. Okay? Anywhere where you see a fork, there's a mutation. Okay? And that mutation has a name, and then the name of that mutation is in red. Okay? It really doesn't matter, but that's what those little red numbers are. What they've done is they've taken all of the DNA samples, and they've got them down. There's 153 different groups. Yeah? Okay. Can you get one back to Ken? Two of them? The maps. There you go. There's 153 different groups, okay? And if you have really good eyes, you can actually see, like the top says A1, A2, A2A, A2B, okay? Because every time it branched, they had to give it another number, okay? Scientists are great. They're very, they're very meticulous, but they're also very, what's the word, original. And so they went from A down to R. Okay, well, just from the top to the bottom, and then they broke that down when they had letters they couldn't use anymore. They had to start using numbers after the letters themselves broke. So if you come in from the left, you have a mutation right at the beginning, and that family is A. Okay, and then you come down, the next mutation, it splits off, and the next mutation is at mutation number 60 and mutation number 181, and that's the ones that are in the B family. Okay, and so A and B are separate, okay, families, clans, groups. Now, does that make sense? Because we're going to go and apply this in the future. Okay? All those different letters, you can see they're kind of color-coded and they're divided. Every one of those is a little group, a family group. Okay? Clear as mud. Okay, I saw a thumbs up. We're moving on. Now, look at your nice little world map. And this is a map of the Y haplogroups of the world. Remember that 153 things down here? Those are called haplogroups. And they used that word because that word hadn't been invented yet, so they invented it, and that's what it means. It's a haplogroup. Okay? So, yes.
These colors are the same as these colors?
Not the colors, but the letters are. Okay. If you see the little legend there, you got A, B, C, D, E, E, X, E, 3, B, E, 3, B, and all those. Those letters right there correspond to these letters right here. Okay? All right. So, taking a quick look, let's just look at North and South America since it's right there and easily to tell. What's the most predominant color in North and South America? Lavender, yes. Which is what? It's Q. Okay, so where's Q on this? Almost at the bottom. Okay. All right. Just look at, you know, what's Africa? Africa is kind of a light blue. That's the E, all those. Okay? That's a pretty significant, you know. What you can see from this is you can tell that that Q is very far from E. That means there's lots of, that branch happened a long time ago, so there's lots of, there's a large distance. They're not closely related. That's what you can tell with DNA, is how closely things are related. So, that is the data. That's what they've collected. That's what they've analyzed, and that's what they published. You know, and this is what the DNA says, plain and simple. This is the black and white stuff. That's just the plain data. All right. Does everybody understand? Yes.
So, on this chart here.
Yes, this chart.
No.
Why is the chromosome? The oldest mutation would be A. Yes. Okay.
These AMs is a combination of the different groups.
Oh, okay. These?
Yeah. Like, you have
PY, SF. Oh, no. The letters next to the circles. Letters next to the circles. AMs, lots of AMs. That corresponds to down here. That's the actual tribe, if you will. Like AM is for Amerinds. American Indians. Amerinds. Okay? So, if you go up to IC, up in the way left-hand corner, that is Iceland. Okay? That's what the letters next to the circles mean.
The light blue. Is E, right?
Yes. The letters next to the circle, though, mean is a particular tribe. And so let's look at the light blue. Let's just say SF. down there at the bottom of Africa. It's got a bunch of light blue and then some other colors, right?
Yeah.
Okay. SF is South Africa. All right? That's what we can say is the South African tribe that this was taken from is predominantly EXE3B, but it also contains the E3Bs and also some A. Some R. No, that's more of a B, I think. A B and an A, I think. Can I come right? Oh, thanks. That means a lot. Now, does that make sense? Does everybody understand that? Now, the letters next to the circles are the corresponding tribe, okay? Like in the middle of Asia, M-O is not Missouri, it's Mongolia. Just for the fun of it. Okay. That's a huge thing right there, because now you guys have a better understanding of what we're going to talk about. Because we're going to keep these out, because we're going to use them from time to time. So, there's that. I figured you couldn't read that out there either. Actually, it's not bad. So, what's the difference between collection and interpretation? You have a question. I can tell. Yes, on the map.
This isn't migratory patterns. This is native peoples found in those places.
Yes. This is a DNA we collected, and this is what it looks like. We're not trying to make any interpretation out of it. This is just what it is. So what's the difference between data collection and data interpretation? Somebody out there tell me, so I make sure we know it.
This is collection. I just collected something. Interpretation is going to be what I make of this, what you make of this, what Gary makes of this.
Right. It's kind of like glasses. Interpretation is like glasses. You can have rose-colored glasses and life is good. You can have sunglasses. You can have bifocals. Okay, but how you look at life through is affected by what kind of glasses you have. Okay, and these, we take all this data and we look through these glasses and see what we see. And if we want to change what we see, we just get a different pair of glasses. Oh, that looks different. Okay, because some people wear the red and the blue for the three-dimensional. Okay. Anyway. Assumptions determine your conclusions. Now, we're going to start interpreting data. And this is, what was the question again? Where do you get your information? Okay, this is where they get their information. The scientists have these assumptions that are going to determine what all this data means. The first assumption is that modern human species originates from a single evolutionary event. Okay?
Bob?
Yes. The hypothesis is similar. A hypothesis is you throw a question up in the air, and this is a statement I think is belief, and then they make a test to try and test this hypothesis. That's what a hypothesis is. This is just an assumption, okay, that they make because, well, all the other scientists assume it, so we're going to assume it too, just to be consistent. Right, because they're not really trying to. A hypothesis is something you try to prove. An assumption is we're just going to assume it as it is. Okay, so what does those words mean? Evolution. That's all it means. They're assuming evolution. Okay, so when you're looking at interpreting the data, this is what they're looking through. And well, how do they do that? Whenever possible, homologous regions. Remember on that DNA, homologous means it's similar DNA. Homologous regions on the non-recombining Y chromosome, it doesn't really matter, of closely related species, that is chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans, were sequenced to determine the ancestral states of the human polymorphic sites. Blech. What does that mean? Got any idea what that means? Yes. They make that assumption, okay? So, let's look at your tree. at your tree? What they did, they took all these data. They said, okay, these are the mutations. I wonder what it looked like before the mutations, because, well, if the mutation changes from one to the other, well, which one was the first one? Because all we know is that there's a mutation. Oh, we'll go look at an orangutan and say, oh, okay, this is what it must have been. And you see this little arrow right here? That's the starting point, because that compares it to chimpanzees, gorillas, and orangutans. Okay? So, that is what makes, is you know, if this is a tree, that's the root, is a great ape. Do you have a question? An assumption is something that they say, we believe this, but they don't necessarily prove it. They just say, we're going to assume that. All righty. That's not the only, yes.
The problem is that science is something that you have to observe and prove and watch. They can't prove
that. They haven't observed that to occur. So
the entire basis of the theory is built on a farce because they haven't observed evolution first place.
You think?
That's the starting point of the human evolutionary theory.
Yes. Exactly right. What's it built on? The foundation? It's sand. Yes. Uh-huh. Yep. There's a particular factor in her blood that makes it so that there's no way she could be related to a monkey. All right. Another assumption. They're going to assume that migration came across Africa. I'm sorry, was there a question? Yes.
I got lost.
Okay. I'll bring you back.
At the very beginning.
Yeah.
Right up here with the little arrow
is. Yes.
What is that point?
That's the starting point. They're saying,
so that's the starting point of humankind. Yes.
That is the single evolutionary event that separated us from orangutans.
That was the mutation.
That's what they're saying. Because that's what they said. They says, well, where do we start at? Well, we look at these great apes and sit on similar parts of their DNA and we see what was different.
So they're saying that we all mutated
from different apes. I'm sorry, one more time. Yes, I understand.
If we all came from the same spot, wouldn't we all at some point have the same mutation?
Yes.
But we don't according to this chart.
Right. I'm not sure if we can say that. What they're saying is this mutation doesn't include that list of mutations there in red. Those are not all the mutations there are. Okay? There are many... many more mutations than these. These are the ones that they're able to track. And I hope that makes sense. I'm not sure it makes sense to me. Yes.
This beginning one where the arrow is.
Yep.
Is it saying that there's four mutations right there in the very beginning?
I believe what it's saying is they're saying that these four mutations are different than gorilla. And so, therefore, that's what makes us different. Yes, something like that. That's what I think. Not necessarily what's true. But let's look at another assumption. The other assumption is that human species evolved in Africa and then moved throughout the rest of the world. Okay? And they assume mutation rates. Okay, you notice a lot of assumptions? Okay, it takes a lot of assumptions to get to where you want to go. Once you determine your conclusion, then you got to start figuring out how many assumptions you got to make it fit. And I think that's what happens a lot of times is, I want this DNA to say this, so what kind of assumptions do I have to make here to make it fit where I want it to? All right, so Another assumption is they assume mutation rates. Okay? Just grabbing mutation rates out of the sky. Okay? And that's important because that affects that in Africa, it was 130,000 to 70,000 years ago. Okay? If they assume these mutation rates, this is what they're saying, was our nearest common male relative. Okay? And that puts us in Western Asia. You know what Western Asia is? Middle East. Okay? Everybody understand that? 50,000 to 45,000 years ago. All right? That's the result of those assumptions. But, once again, assumptions to determine conclusions. Let's look at the exact same data from a biblical worldview. All right? Let's make a difference because we'll take those glasses off and put on a different pair of glasses. We're looking at the same data. We're just going to look through it through different eyes. We're going to assume creation. Why? Because God said so, and we're Christians. And we're going to assume it's 6,000 years ago. That's the closest we can get to Adam being here 6,000 years ago as our most common or our first common male ancestor. Okay? We're going to assume a global flood approximately 4,500 years ago. Okay? That makes who our most recent common male ancestor? Noah. Okay? And we're going to assume that Noah landed on Mount Ararat in eastern Turkey and not in Africa. Okay? And that affects the same amount of data we're going to look at the same amount of data through those assumptions. Okay. Anybody got this one out? What this means, you see where the tips of the tree are here, or the top of the hedge right here? Okay. That's present time. All right? And if you go backwards this way, you're going back in time. Going this way, you're going back in time, right? Okay. So from this point here to this point here is, according to science, anywhere from 70,000 to 130,000 years ago. Okay? So if that is true, if we're going to assume those facts, then Adam and Eve are right about here, which is after 90% of the mutations have occurred. Now Adam and Eve come along. Well, that doesn't make sense. Okay? It's not compatible between Adam and Eve and science. Okay? And we're not trying to convince a bunch of scientists. We're trying to convince fellow Christians who say, yeah, we believe in God. We believe in the creation. Okay? But this doesn't. All right? If we say this is present and here is 6,000 years ago. All right? Now, that brings us down. About 4,500 years ago is about where F is. Okay? So, that was about 4,500 years ago where Noah. Okay? Where Noah was alive. Okay? But we see with evolution, it's all one way. But no, how many sons did Noah have? Three, okay? Mutations happen because something was either added, something was changed, or something was deleted. Okay? So there's different kinds of mutations that can occur. Happens is they make this assumption that, well, it used to be this, and now it's this. Well, who determines that? Because why can't it start at F and actually go both ways? If you drop a pebble in the pond, what happens? It goes all over. Okay? They're assuming a one-way mutation. And we're saying, no, it can go both ways. So, the gist of it, though, is you get down around here, I can't tell you exactly where I am, is where Lehi separated from. When did Lehi separate from Jerusalem? 600 B.C. Yes. Okay. If you assume that here is present, here is 6,000 years ago, that means that almost 60% of these mutations occurred after Lehi had left. Okay? So I think that answers your question. That if 60% of these mutations have occurred after they left, well, how in the world, why would they even look remotely alike? They shouldn't. Because they've been separated. Okay? Because the mutations that they had, they didn't share with their brothers back in the Holy Land. The mutations that they had in the Holy Land didn't get shared with them. They became isolated, and they had two trees. Does that make sense? Because that's huge. Because, you know, 60% of the mutations is a lot. Okay, especially when they start saying, well, mostly, you know, they don't look anything alike. They shouldn't. And that's what I want you to get across. They shouldn't look alike. Because they were separated before a lot of these mutations occurred. Does that make sense? Because if that's the only thing you get out of here, that's what I want you to get out of here. Okay? And the scientific and the DNA versus the Book of Mormon scheme is it took 100,000 years. Okay? And so therefore, because 90% of the mutations happened to occur before then if they were truly related, they should be very close. Yes?
Well, I guess based on what you're saying, then they're their worst enemy, because if they have longer spans for these mutations, and we're talking about a very short period of time at the very beginning where we're at presently, 99 or 90% of the mutations always occur because you're only looking at 1,000 years.
Right. Yes. And so when the scientist says, yes, there is absolutely no similarity between a Jew and a Native American. You know, there's no correlation. They don't coincide at all. Okay? Well, to them, that's a big thing because all the mutations happened, 100,000 years ago, started 100,000 years ago. But we're saying no. Those mutations are much more recent. And how did they come up with those numbers? Part of them, they assume a mutation rate. Just assume it. And part of it is they say, well, because carbon dating what was the guy's name? The archaeologist or anthropologist down in Africa, Leakey. That in Africa, 7,500,000 years ago, however long that was. And if you want to have questions about carbon dating, see Brian. Okay? But it's not as accurate as they want you to believe. Okay, does that make sense? Because that's the huge thing, is the results of your assumptions. The results are that 90%, if you assume evolution, 90% of the mutations happen before biblical time. But if you assume biblical, 60% of them happened after they separated. So they shouldn't look alike. So, all right, if you get that, I'm so proud. Okay, yeah. But not only do the ancestors of Native Americans not come from Israel, but we know where they come from, and that's from the northern part of East Asia. Okay? Thomas Murphy, he's the real motivator behind that movie. Okay? He's the Mormon scholar who published his interpretation of all this DNA data. He's the one, if you ever watch it, it's almost comical because he's just so worried about the Mormon church because he's still a Mormon. And, you know, I don't know what the Mormon church is going to do because they're just, you know, that doesn't match, okay? But what do you think of that statement? What's that? Okay, but you got to tell me why. And don't use scripture because, you know, it's merely interesting. I'm a scientist. Because I'm in charge of the science department at Edmonds Community College. Yes. Yes. Well, this is what the DNA says. But you know, it's not just him. Because science, you know, genetic markers are more closely related to people from Siberia. Okay? The DNA data indicate the closest affinity of contemporary Native American populations are with populations in East Asia and Central Asia. Right? The homeland of Native Americans is East Asia. The genetic evidence shows that the American Indian came from Asia. Okay? All these guys are scientists. All these guys are in this movie. Okay? Let's look at the data. What does the data say? Well, let's look at your map. Well, Q is over there in North and South America, and Q is in Siberia. They might have something there.
Q in its purest form is in the south.
Really?
And it changes as you go north.
Okay, so where do you know, what do you mean by that? Where do you get your information? How do you know it's true? Not all scientists are in agreement with this. And that's the thing about science is you can never get 100 scientists almost to agree to everything. Okay? However, the combination of genetic evidence with ethno-historical data on these populations led us to consider a different conclusion. We suggested that the occurrence of this marker in Siberia is better explained by back migration of males from North America to Siberia with subsequent gene flow to Asia. Don't you just hate it when you make a statement and then the science goes, well, you know what? You look at the data and it says it goes backwards. Oh, I hate it, because how long have they been saying they came from Siberia to North America? I bet it was since Ken was in school. That was a long time ago. Okay? All the time in school is, well, they came across the Bering Strait when the last ice age, because it lowered the water levels and they could walk across, right? They were absolutely right. It just went the other way. Okay? Is that gospel? No, that's as much an interpretation as coming the other way. But the thing is, who's right? How do you know who's right? Okay? That's the thing is you can't make a concrete, firm stand when it comes to science of this sort, because it's all interpretation. It's all what kind of glasses you look through. Okay? And especially if you decide this is what I want the data to say, then I'll figure out a way to make all this data fit into that. Depends on what assumptions I start out with. Does everybody understand so far? Yes, no? Okay. Yes. No. Yes. That would be the tree, yes.
Regardless of which side of the aisle you come from, do they know the mutation rate of this chart? Is that assumed?
Yeah, that's all assumed. Yeah, the rates are assumed. They're just saying, well, this is where we are here. We've known all these mutations have occurred. We know, and they can tell, well, this group has this mutation, but not this one. So they're closely related, but they're not exactly. So we got another branch.
They don't even have two mutations that happen that they can trace and say
what I have been able to read so far is what most of their stuff is an assumed mutation rate of 2 times 10 to the negative 3, if that means anything to anybody, okay? But what they're actually finding is there's two different kinds. There is, if you give me a chance, I'll look it up. There's, they actually call it evolutionary mutation rates and hereditary mutation rates. Now, the hereditary ones are the ones that they can actually track, and it's actually 10 times faster with the hereditary than it is with the... I believe so. But the whole thing is that when they assume the evolutionary rate, it's much slower than the ones that they can actually measure so far. But not everybody uses those. So if you want this data to fit what you want, they'll pick the assumption, the mutation rate that you want. And they'll say, well, we use it because these guys over here did. That's all they'll do. Okay. Does everybody understand, kind of, sort of? If someone said, hey, you know what, DNA, has, you know, scientists have proven that the Book of Mormon is wrong. Can you have an answer for them? Yes, no, maybe? Are you, huh?
Yes.
Yes, good. Yes. And that's exactly where I want you to go with it. Science, you can't go into science and say, well, I like this, but I don't like that, so I don't want that. I like that, but, oh, you know what, I don't want that one over here. Okay? You can't go through and say, well, I like these different points that science makes or these different interpretations, but I don't like these different interpretations. Okay? It's like when it's exactly the same as when you say, the Smithsonian Institution says that there's no link between Mayans and there's no Hebrew origins for the Native American peoples. Okay, and you go to the Smithsonian Institution and say, well, how many of you guys actually believe in creation? And none of them do. Okay, and that's what we find is that they use this data, assuming that it tells them what it wants, but they don't look closely enough to say, well, what is it really saying? Because you can use the same data to shoot them, not shoot them, but shoot down their arguments, if that makes sense. Because what are you doing? What is their foundation on? It's on sand. It's movable. Those assumptions are movable. You dig out from underneath that foundation, and they can't stand. If you undermine them, that's, hey, what you're assuming here is, you understand that they say that because they assume evolution. Well, I don't believe that, okay? That's because they never took time to read through the effective mutation rate at Y chromosome short tandem repeats with application to human population divergence time. And I understand why they didn't. But that's what it tells you when you look closely at it. But you can't just let it affect you and say, oh, okay. Look deeper and you can see. So, what can DNA show? Closeness of relationship. I'm not going to turn to it because I'm past my time as it is. Does everybody know this story in Genesis 48 when Joseph, he's in Egypt, he's married an Egyptian, which is one thing. You ever think about that? Manasseh and Ephraim were both half Egyptian. Okay? So they weren't even full-blood Hebrew to begin with. So, Jacob's old, he's nearly blind. Joseph walks up to him with his kids. This is Ephraim, this is Manasseh. Manasseh's my oldest. He puts him up there so Manasseh's on his right-hand side and Jacob can't see very well, and he crosses his arms. Everybody know the story, okay? And he says, and Joseph goes, oh, wait a minute, Dad. No, I know what I'm doing. He says, Manasseh's going to be a great people, okay? But Ephraim is going to be a multitude of nations. All right. There, and I'm not going to preach this as gospel, But there is a belief in the church among many people, and I'll be honest with you, I haven't studied it out sufficiently myself. But I'll throw it out there for you for your consideration if you have the time. And that is that most of the European nations are of Ephraim, okay? Specifically going up into England, all right? For your consideration. Now, dig out your map. Everybody got your map? What is the predominant colors in Western Europe? Red and yellow. What colors are those? What letters are those? R's. R. Right? Now go back to your tree. What's the closest relative to Q? R. Well, that's interesting. We can tell that the closest one of the closest relationships to the peoples that are here are European. Okay? Just food for thought. We may know more about that later. But what's the predominant... let's look at Mongolian, because they always say that Native Americans have Mongoloid features. What's the predominant color there? Or what letter of that color? It's kind of salmon. Oh, I like salmon. I don't know. C. Where is C on this? On your tree. How far is the separation between C and Q? If they were closely related, there wouldn't be that many branches between them. That's all you can tell with DNA is that is the closeness of how closely that you're related. Okay. Because otherwise you're assuming mutation rates, you're assuming all these different things. All you can tell from this is, well, yeah, those two groups are closely related. Their mutations happen later in time. So just food for thought, just to throw it out there. Conclusions. Everybody understand data collection versus interpretation. Data is data. It's simply information. Interpretation is the glasses you look through. It's how you're going to look at it. How you're going to interpret it. What do you want that data to say? And you find the right glasses. Oh, there you go. That's the right set of glasses. These are the glasses I'm going to use. Okay? Whether they're the right glasses or not, that's up to interpretation, okay? Conclusions are determined by your assumptions. The data is data. It's the assumptions that they make at the beginning that determines what ends up in the end, okay? If you assume a biblical point of view, then their conclusions don't coincide. It's all about evolutionary versus biblical time worldview. Yes.
What's kind of interesting here is that with what you just said, the Philippines is right next to
you. You noticed that, too.
The Philippines is right next to you.
Uh-huh. Oh, this is a cool map. Because you can look at it. Because I saw there was a... And there's another one that's similar to this. I try to keep it simple, so I only use the Y chromosome. Okay? They're the mitochondrial DNA, and I don't want to go very far into it, but it's similar. But mitochondrial is what's passed on by the moms, okay, from mother to daughter to daughter to daughter, okay. What's really cool about them is that the Polynesians are very close.
Well, in the Korean,
they
feel they're from the seed of the
world. There's, I think that this is going to be really cool in the future. Through the right set of glasses. Okay? So, yes?
I know you just said you don't want to go into the mitochondrial DNA, but people have looked into it, and it's interesting because there are less mutations that can occur in the mitochondria because they're passing through the X chromosome.
Right.
And then get an X chromosome, and women get an X chromosome.
that's there's still so much in the infancy of this that they're actually, you know, working on. But what they've done is they've taken, oh, this is the data, and this is what we want the data to say, so we're going to assume these things, and it'll say it. Yes. Absolutely.
And so when they try to, there's a lot of I don't understand. I've read articles on it. Some contradict each other, and one thing and another, I guess it depends on what kind of glasses they got on.
It's so all depends on what kind of glasses.
But you know, you can't, when they take a DNA to find out whose baby a woman is carrying, okay, and they can tell a difference, okay, well, that's not yours, it don't belong to you. When you take a look at Joseph, okay, Manasseh and Ephraim, like you said, they're half Egyptian. Okay, and when they come right down to it, Joseph, he wasn't of the same mother as Judah. So you can't say, well, you know, if we tested Judah out here, a Jew, and it's entirely different than this Indian over here, yeah, it's better than that.
Yep.
You know, it's entirely different.
Mm-hmm. No, it's absolutely. It all depends on what assumptions you make at the beginning. Real quick before I'm done. Now that we know all this, what's the last? Oh, by the way, last one. What if you're wrong? Okay. And maybe this is what I really want to talk about is, okay, we feel like we got the truth. You know, We know this stuff. You know, we look at the data through biblical glasses, and it says something completely different to us. Okay? But that truth is a burden. And we have to be very careful about how we present it. And I want to turn real quick over to 2 Timothy. And I want to make sure we have this attitude in us. Because remember when John the Baptist was started baptizing, and the Pharisees and the scribes saying, we're coming to watch him. And they said, and they were willing to, they were the kinds of ones that said, hey, we're Abraham's our father. What do we have to worry about this for? And he said, you know, Abraham, you know, God can raise up these stones. To be the seed of Abraham or something similar to that. They started thinking, hey, we're the seed of Abraham. We got it. And I don't want us to start having that hey, we're the Church of Christ. And we're cool. And we have the truth. And unfortunately for you, it's no different than the Pharisees saying, yeah, we're the seed of God. We're God's chosen. The Gentiles are kind of, they're out there. I don't want that attitude to come into us. And the temptation of this modern world of pride, it can happen. Pride's a funny thing. Pride's one of those things that you say, you know what, I think I finally got a handle on my pride. I got it. I whipped that pride. Yes, I got it. Oh, wait, I'm getting proud about that. It's a weird thing, isn't it? It's one of those things that you always have to be aware of, because it's something we all slide right into. 2 Timothy chapter 2, 24th verse, says, and the servant of the Lord must not strive. And I think we're, in this context, we're all servants of the Lord. But to be gentle unto all men, apt to teach, patient. In meekness, instructing those that oppose themselves. Because that's what that movie does. They don't understand it, but they're actually opposing themselves. With the DNA opposes what they're trying to say. They can't see it yet. But we have responsibilities that when we have an opportunity, we try to explain it to them. And we have to do it in the right attitude. In meekness, patient, and meekness instructing those that oppose themselves, if God peradventure will give them repentance to the acknowledging of the truth, that they may recover themselves out of the snare of the devil, who are taken captive by him at his will. I do not, like I said when I first started, I don't doubt the sincerity and of the individuals who are making these claims, for the most part. Especially those who are, you know, if you got friends that come up and try and tell you about this, hey, do you guys understand this? It's because they're concerned about you, and I'm not going to doubt their sincerity. But our sincerity has to be just as genuine for their soul. And we can't say, yeah, that's the stupidest thing I ever heard. We have to do it in meekness with the right attitude. Make sense? Did anybody learn anything tonight? Okay. Do you guys know what you're going to say when someone says, hey, I heard the DNA proves, evidence proves, disproves the Book of Mormon? yeah, I'll be working that day. All right, thank you for your time.